This is the iMoveU podcast, getting you private practice ready. We give you fresh ideas on mindset, communication, and clinical skills so you can have a fulfilled career.
Kat, this is Kat's first year in private practice, so be gentle and be kind. I'll probably be the meanest person on here as always, because that's my mentoring style. And what I found interesting about this back pain case is there's like, in that initial consult, there is literally a thousand ways that first conversation could go. And it can be so, so complex and so, so complicated, but then also it can be so simple. And what we wanted to talk about was like all the questions and pathways that we went down and all the questions and pathways we could have gone down. And then what I'm really interested in is what other people would have done or what other people would have asked in this case. Now, the kicker, which I actually haven't told anyone this yet in the lead up, Kat, is this person with back pain is actually my mum. So this live is done with her permission. And wow. What's interesting is I had so much information about this before Kat did, knowing that Kat had an initial consult. So it'd be really interesting to see what I know about my mum's CUP and BPS framework and stresses and what Kat was able to get out of the consult. So Kat, tell us, what did you, tell us the initial. So tell me about what your impression is of the back pain, what information you got and how you went about it.
Okay, so I had this 60-year-old female walk into my clinic with a diagnosis that she sort of brought up with acute on chronic lower back pain. I had some information that she'd had two or three flare-ups, most for years now, and wanted to get a graded strength program to try and get back some quality of life and reduce those instances of the flare-up. So in terms of my questioning, I sort of, since going to the iMoveU day, I've tried to ask more rounded questions in my subjective as well. So like kind of what brings you here today? How does it limit you? Like why you're actually here? What do you expect from physio? Kind of things that I probably wouldn't normally have done. So she wasn't able to identify an acute mechanism of injury. Just said it just sort of gradually got pretty sore over the last two or three weeks. She wasn't able to identify a specific movement per se. And she said that she'd had back pain for a number of years. Sorry, Mick, if you want to jump in at any point,
no,
please
going.
Go ahead.
Keep going.
She said that at like just in sitting, her pain was about a 2 or 3 out of 10. So not, you know, in our areas of 8s or 9s, but still like gradually pretty there in the background.
Yeah.
She had had this issue before. She had come to iMove before, but it has had actually been 3 years earlier to see Ivana, one of our other physios, and it was for some heel pain, so it wasn't actually back pain. I'd asked if she'd seen a physio for her back in the past. She said no. I was like, really? That's surprising, given a few... But yeah, treating your parents. I've never treated my parents, so
it's a no-no.
Yeah, they don't listen to you. They do not listen to anything you say.
No, so I just good. Yell at her to do deadlifts. How's that for motivational interviewing?
I don't know. Yeah, I think it only works sometimes. In terms of her physical activity levels, she had a gym membership at where was it? She used to go to Riverwood Gym last year, but hasn't been very much lately this year, partly because of COVID and not being able to leave the house. And I get the sense she wasn't like terribly into the gym, but that was my perception. I might be very wrong. She used to walk quite a lot every day for about 40 minutes, but she's finding that really, really hard at the moment, and she sort of fatigues after about 20 minutes. So that was something that I identified as something that she might like to get back into, increase that walking duration for her. in terms of quality of life as well. Does have a treadmill at home and some weights, some little ones, like a little hand weight. So that's useful to know. In terms of her general health, overall, pretty good. Had some, Mick, I don't know if you, she had some like kidney, I don't know, can I say that? Is that okay? No, it's not really important. It's not important. Okay,
yeah, next one. I didn't specifically ask about that stuff. I'm sure it would be okay. Fine. But there's a little bit of, what would we say, other medical history.
Really? Oh, gosh. Here we go. No.
Yeah.
It's getting spicy now. Okay. Yeah. What I got, she's had some cortisone injections in the past, which had kind of helped for a little bit, but not long-lasting, and she had some x-rays a long time ago, but didn't seem to like go into that too much. It was just like, oh, yeah, I had scans years ago.
Yeah.
So I moved on.
I might ask at this point if what questions any of the viewers would ask at this point, and what was her pattern of pain currently? So where was it sore?
In terms of like 24 hour as well, or just generally?
Oh, sorry. On her body, where was she sore?
She had generalized lower back pain, but it was actually referring down her right leg. So that was going all the way down into her anterior shin and around a little bit in like down her knee area.
Yeah.
I was thinking that typical L4-5. Distribution. Didn't have any pins and needles, numbness. I didn't check her sensation, and thinking about that, I probably would have. She didn't say anything about sensation loss, but I think on the next review, I'd probably have a look at it just to double check.
Yep.
In terms of her pain pattern, she was finding relief going into extension. She actually had quite good standing flexion range. I thought she was like getting probably about 3/4 of the way down, which was nice.
Yeah.
With about 2 or 3 out of 10 pain in the lower back.
What diagnosis would you have given a diagnosis either to yourself or to the patient?
I was thinking of one to myself. I didn't specifically tell her what I was thinking. Actually, in case I was wrong. but what I was thinking is likely a right-sided discogenic L4, L5 irritation. Mm-hmm. I know that's quite broad, but that was where I was kind of feeling it was going. And the way I explained it, I got the whiteboard out, did the graph of, you know, flare-ups, and talked about how you have like a level of back strength.
Yeah.
And that sort of equals how many flare-ups you have and how bad they are. And then I kind of, on the whiteboard, showed her how if we can get that strength higher to be able to cope with that load, the flare-ups will be less and less frequent, and also the duration will be not as bad.
Yeah, which is probably checkpoint one. That's a great explanation for her as far as flare-ups and it being up and down. But the other thing to consider here is that strength may not correlate to her pain at all, which some of the newer research is showing. So it could be one factor, and it definitely may help, but we don't know for sure. It's probably a better narrative than most to give to a patient, especially someone who you think has been inactive and has probably been better before when they were in the gym. So that's just one thing that's worth considering at this point. Did you give a diagnosis to the patient, or did you avoid that?
I didn't. Part of the reason I didn't was when she first walked in, she was like, oh, I've had some scans and it's L4-5 right at the start. And
yeah,
she didn't seem like one of those patients who really, really wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
Like she seemed pretty happy listening to my explanation, and I kind of sort of thought it was probably something similar as well. I don't know if that might have guided my thinking anyway, even just for the fact that she said it at the start, and because I knew that you were her mum and might have influenced that as well. So I'm like, she's probably on the money here. So I didn't go into that too much with her.
I've got some questions here. So Alex asks, what brought her in for this particular episode? And she mentioned she had pain on and off for a few years, but no physio, so why now?
I think she looked kind of almost resigned to the fact that she needed to get some strengthening.
Mm-hmm.
She sat there and I was like, oh, you know, like it's been bad for a while, but like right now I just like, I probably need to get on top of it. I probably need to strengthen. I feel like there was probably a bit of bullying happening. I know that potentially Mick might have suggested that she come in for physio, but she's got
100%.
Because he's got like a brand new physio that he wants to get a bit more experience as well.
No, that's not the case.
I guess I don't have a definite answer. I'm not sure why exactly that day she walked into my clinic, but
yeah. Well, maybe what's been happening is she's been complaining a lot more about it, and I've been yelling at her a lot more about it, so she finally went. So it has been getting a lot worse in the last month. Was there a second part to that question? No, that was it. Nick says, interested in the fatigue on walking, just to rule out any claudication. So that might be something worth looking into and asking some, I guess, red flag questions. She has had a history of a dissected artery in the neck, which has been completely cleared up at this point. And JB Rust says, the whiteboard explanation sounds awesome. Okay, so at this point, without a diagnosis, let's just leave the diagnosis altogether. What stressors do you think are contributing to this person's back pain? What really stood out for you after you did the initial?
I think probably being at home all the time during the corona thing, in my mind, probably contributed a bit because everyone's being a bit more stationary. No one's really going for walks or that non-essential travel. Yeah. I think that could have possibly contributed to that stiffness and overall lack of tolerance.
Yeah.
I also think she hasn't been going to the gym lately because all the gyms are closed.
Mm-hmm.
So even if she was going, I feel like that's something that's not happening anymore.
Yeah.
Those probably be my two big things for why she could potentially be feeling even worse over the last month.
Yeah, yeah. There's two things that I know of that I'd be interested to see if came through was mum's not working currently. And two, when she was training, she was significantly lighter. So what we've all noticed is since she stopped training in the last couple months, she's put that weight back on. And that was actually a big reason for her to train. And she was 2 months ago, she was just super proud and looking really good and wasn't in pain and super fit. And then this kind of stuff. You're right, she doesn't love the gym. She loves getting outside and walking, and that's happened less. But what the gym did for her in that time, I think, really resonated with her. And the other factor here is my sister's a personal trainer, and she was training with my sister. So how much of that came out for you?
I did not, unfortunately, get any of that. She said she was retired, and I was like, oh, she's been retired for a while. Cool. Okay.
Okay. No, but that's relevant. Because so you knew that she wasn't working. And all that might tip you off to is there a lot of activity in this person's life at the moment? And it sounds like you definitely knew that a couple of things in her week were not happening as they used to, including the gym. And so for someone who's not working, you know, think about a physio and how you're standing and you're sitting and you're getting up and down. Even if you're in an office, you're getting up and down, you're walking around. If for someone who's not working now can't do the two social activities in their week and they've stopped going to a gym, that's a significant change, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like you definitely knew that there was a big change recently. I wasn't sure if you knew about the work status or the gym and the weight status. Did that come through?
No. No, that would have, I think, I don't know if that would have changed what I've done, but it definitely would have just made a bigger picture, I think, which would have been good to know.
Yeah. I wonder if a question might have elicited that from her. Like, is there anything that you've noticed that's changed in the last couple of months? Because you seem to know it wasn't acute, right? It seemed like something that was a build-up.
Usually at the end of my subjective, I'm like, anything else that you think might be relevant? That could have been her chance to get in there. Otherwise, I could have just been more specific with my questioning, which I think is probably what I needed to do.
Yeah.
You can
assume and infer a lot of things. So the really important thing is there's no work, social activities have decreased, and the gym has stopped. So whether that's about weight or not, we would probably want the patient to volunteer that information. You could be the same weight or heavier and have no back pain. So that's we're not saying that that's the cause. It's just, I think you have got the key yellow flags, if we call them that. So less activity, less gym, less social history. And if we think about the bucket or the cup analogy, I think you've identified those pretty well.
Cool. Do you find that there's a better way to approach weight, especially if you've got like a, I don't know, like a middle-aged woman? Like, is there a way? Because sometimes it can be a sensitive issue. Like, do you find there's a sort of a good way to approach that without offending them more?
I might ask everyone who's on, how does that come about in your consults? Do you directly ask the question, or do you wait a couple of sessions? I was really bad at it. So I asked for permission. So how I would normally open that up is, we know that back pain has a lot of stresses. There's a lot of things in your life that could contribute, particularly if it's not an acute back pain like this patient. So I'm actually going to ask you what might seem like a lot of strange questions, but that might just tip us off to something to do with your back pain. So I might ask about other medical histories. I might ask about gym. I might ask about weight loss. Sometimes I'll just let it happen when they talk about their gym. So, you know, why did you go to the gym? Was that to get stronger, to get fitter, to get more tone, to lose weight loss? And I'll kind of say it in that kind of approach after they mention the gym. So that's usually a good opportunity to bring it up where it sounds relevant to them. It's not like you're just saying out of nowhere, how's your weight? So I'd be interested to see what others think of that one. I've got a question here, Kat. I'd like to know where she notices it in her life and what it's limiting.
Probably for her, well, from what I got, it was her walking. She was like, I just can't walk as far as I used to be able to walk. I just get really sore, so I turn back. And I was like, that sounds really sad. That would be nice to be able to walk a bit further. So,
and that's a really, that's a pain cycle we have to trap, right? Because we're starting to think that walking could be the only thing that helps, but it's happening in walking, and so now I'm going to walk less. That's a tough, for me, I'd have an asterisk there going, oh, we have to address this loop somehow for this patient. Anna Lou says, I usually ask about weight loss or weight gain in the red flag section and use that as a prompt in the conversation about whether their current weight is normal, in quotations. So yeah, there's the direct approach, like, hey, I'm going to have to ask some uncomfortable medical questions, or there's the indirect of, you know, tell me about the gym, tell me about your activity, tell me about your body, and hopefully it comes out there. Gary from Equilibrium says he kind of just asks any major weight fluctuations you've noticed in the past. And Saranga says, I ask during my treatment, I lead with questions like, do you enjoy cooking? What types of things do you enjoy doing outdoors? And then I talk about food or what they enjoy doing more. So that's I like that because it's happening later. There's probably a little bit more trust built, seems a little bit more natural, potentially when you're doing some manual therapy or when you're doing the exercises in the gym. And she followed up with how it might benefit if we were to lose some weight. Cool. First, let's reflect on that. Was there anything that came up for you there that you feel you might follow up with?
I think just If I didn't know all those things, I'd probably try and get all those things next session, but I kind of do know the things now. But maybe just get a bit more detail about it in the next review. Yeah.
And this is what stood out when I was speaking to you. There's no right or wrong. You've attained so much good information, and then it starts to get into a practical kind of question of, like, how long do we talk for? Like, you've got so much good information, and I have a lifetime of information. So I thought this was such a unique opportunity for me to know so much about someone and for you to do an initial. And how complex that is, how difficult that is for you to make a judgment call in 20 to 30 minutes of talking to someone. So that really stood out to me. And that's what we do every day. And for someone in their first year of private practice, that's the challenge, right? Which you've obviously done really well in this case, because I've spoken to Mum about the consult after. So good inside info here. I feel like I'm playing a weird game that I shouldn't be.
This is your bread and butter, Rick. You love this stuff.
I live for this. Like, the fly on the wall. This is what every physio wants to do, is, like, be the fly on the wall for both people. So let's move to the objective. What did you test? What stood out for you? You don't have to name everything, but maybe the key things.
Yeah, just her walking in the room was great. She didn't have a limp. She was walking pretty freely, looking at me, smiling. I was like, cool. We're not struggling to get in the door. She sat down pretty easily. Didn't seem to be in discomfort sitting, which was nice.
Yeah.
And her manner was really good.
Yeah.
So she had a nice, engaging manner. Wasn't huddled in a corner in a dark room.
Can you tell everyone what you said yesterday about how you didn't think this person was my mum?
Well, I just didn't think she'd be Mick's mum. Like, so she was she was too quiet. She just kind of, like, walked in very timidly, like, almost meekly. And I, like, vaguely brought up pasta, and she was like, I love pasta. But, like, not with, like, the emphasis that I suspected was actually underlying there. And, like, I just thought she'd be yelling down the clinic by the time she left. But she was like, thank you so much. And I was like, you're welcome. That's not Rick's mum. And then I asked her, I was like, so what's it like having Mick as a son? Did you get dragged to a lot of cricket matches? And she was like, oh, yes. So many cricket. And I was like, you poor thing. And she's like, oh, I don't mind. I actually liked it too much. And I was like, that's good.
You're being way too nice. You said that I'm loud and abrupt, and she was so kind and quiet. Yeah. Anyways. And I said, that's not my real mum. She's a fiery Italian. So where were we? Objective, two or three things that popped out in the objective for you.
So that was that. In terms of her, I looked at her active ROM first in terms of my objective. So just standing 1 or 2 out of 10 pain, into standing forward flexion about 3/4 range, 2 or 3 out of 10, and felt it in her lower back.
Yeah.
She actually found going back into extension was easing. So I was like, hey, found something. Thank God. Lateral flexion, she was hinging quite a bit through L1, L2, I suspected, but no pain, which was good. Mm-hmm. Rotation was fine. I had a look just for her to do some sort of functional movements as well. She wasn't able to do the lunge at all because of the pain in her right leg at the front, just when she went into a right lower limb forward lunge. So I was like, ooh, that
right could be something forward to work up.
I think so.
The leg that is getting the symptoms down the leg, I don't know, but I actually haven't seen this, but usually the leg that is getting the neural symptoms will struggle when it's at the front.
Yeah, it was her right lower leg is sore.
Be interesting to have a look at that and follow that up. Yep.
Yeah, I might have got the legs wrong. Okay, I can have a look.
No, that's okay.
Her squat was actually pretty good. I was like, cool. I had a look at her lower back endurance. So I first tried to do like a reverse bridge, just like a normal bridge, just with her chest up towards the sky. But I was unable to get a really good assessment because her arms were getting too sore. So I was like, find something else. And that's also like probably a too tough an exercise for a 60-year-old, maybe. So I tried like a prone Superman, which is just lying on her tummy and she has to lift her arms and her legs back up. She could only hold this for, and I like this exercise, this sort of outcome as well, because it's in her like pain-free range. So she was able to go into extension. So it wasn't ideally giving her pain, but it's a good indication of her lower back strength. And she could only hold that for about 37 seconds before she fatigued. So we identified that that's potentially something she could get a bit stronger in terms of endurance-wise with that. I did a slump test just sitting off the edge of the bed, and she had like a positive pain result in her lower back and also in her sciatic, like it's like her right hamstring when I did the slump.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I tested.
Cool. So I'm
She did have a bit of increased tone through her paraspinals. Yeah, sorry.
So I might open it up to everyone. What are one or two really key things you would have liked to have assessed, or maybe you might ask Kat at this point? What's standing out for me, Kat, is you're noticing either a lack of strength or endurance, potentially you've just tested endurance at this point. You're noticing, I'm really interested in your thoughts around the L1 hinging. What does that mean to you? That stood out to me.
I noticed that she had what I thought like pretty reasonable thoracic movement. So I think she was probably getting most of the movement from her thoracic spine, but her lumbar was quite stiff.
Mm.
That was my impression.
I think what's really good is you're observing and you're looking. I think a lot of new grads have particularly, and you could argue the evidence sits on this side of like, what we see is actually not that reliable. And so it's, we have to be careful not to make too many inferences from what we see. What stands out for me when someone does that though, is could that actually just be potentially guarding because of the pain? And could that tip you off that there's a guarding pattern? Or are they just stiff? And you probably, this is why it's so complicated. You don't know that because it's the first time you've met this person. That might be how their lumbar spine moves all the time, or that might be on this presentation because they're in pain. So that's a really, I'm really glad you looked at that. Something I would asterisk, but at the same time, trying not to make too many inferences from that. Potentially after doing, you know, one or two consults or some breathing, or the pain starts to subside, or you get her more confident in her movements, maybe you start to see that come back, or maybe you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Denny's jumped in with, you don't know, exclamation point. Classic Denny.
Who let him on? What the heck?
Who let him on? And so that was one thing. The second thing was easing into extension. So again, we can't make too many inferences from between session changes, but it's good that we've got something that might relieve, and it sounds like flexion is aggravating. And the third thing is it definitely looks like there's some neural component at play here with the slump test. I'm just reading the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Did you check hip flexions, ranges, faders, fabers? And did you do sensory at all? So no, Kat didn't do sensory, but we could go into sensory and muscle tests. That might be something. And Denny's saying we don't know what came first, which is true. So I might just go back to that question. Did you check any of the hip ranges?
No, I didn't.
Okay. And I might ask Anna Lou, what would the hip ranges tip you off to? And I'm just saying hello and good morning to Gordon and Alex Bell from Running Room.
Yay!
Good morning. So just reflecting on your objective assessment, is there anything you feel like you may want to go back to check, or were you quite happy that seems like you've got some neural, you've got a direction that aggravates, a direction that eases, and sounds like you're starting to realize that the endurance is low?
I think I would have liked to check glutes. That would have mm-hmm. been good. But I probably don't think I may have to assess much more in that mm-hmm. session. I probably would have laid it. Maybe I'm just covering myself here, but I think I I might have layered it a little bit. So, like, checking the sensory next one
includes
as well. Like, I think I.
What jumps out for me, Kat, is I have 32 years of information on this patient. And I also, when I say it can be extremely complicated and extremely simple at the same time, there's probably another 10 or 15 or 20 objective tests everyone on this call might do, right? If everyone pitched in their top two, and then it just becomes practically impossible to get really good information. We also don't know if that information is 100% correct because we don't know this person trusts us yet. It is also sometimes very difficult in the second, third, fourth session to go back to those initial questions. It's probably what we have to do a little bit more of, is like keep going as it a little bit more initial in the second, third, and fourth consults. When I say it's extremely complicated, is there's so many factors here. Like, you're noticing there might be guarding, you're noticing there's some slump, you're noticing the gym's backed off a bit, you've noticed a few yellow flags like work and activity, you've done an endurance test. There's so much going on. At the same time, I might be 5 or 10 minutes into this conversation and be able to go, man, obviously there's so many factors to back pain. We're not going to get them all today. It's really clear this person's bucket has been filled with stress, with COVID, with less activity. All I'm going to do today is give a really good example of the bucket analogy and say the first thing that will help you, or the first thing it sounds like you would like to get back to, is regular walking. Could we start that? What tolerance would you be comfortable with? Potentially measuring it a little bit more so we can actually get a really good measure of where that is. I would be really happy with that. The simplest of things, a really good explanation, getting some patient buy-in and her thoughts around it, and starting some activity. So that's why I mean it can be extremely simple, but also it can be really complicated because we've found some direction preference. We've got some exercises or movements we might think we want to prescribe. That's why I found this case so interesting. I've just got some comments here. Do you have any input to that? Anything to add to that?
No.
Did you think of it in that way? Like, man, I could have just done one back exercise and got her back to walking? Or were you... I know when I was a new grad, I was thinking so many things like sensory test, muscle test, what nerve, what disc, what does direction preference mean? Does that affect the exercise I give? You know, I kind of, when I heard you repeat this back to me, I'm like, man, there's a lot of pathways you could go down, and all could be right and all could also be wrong and be picked apart by evidence.
I think there was a lot of things that I was thinking about, but I think I just tried to keep it as simple as I could.
Yeah. And that'll come through in the treatment you prescribed as well. I think you did a really good job keeping it simple.
Do you want to jump into the treatment?
I'm just reading the questions. So this is probably more a reflection of me than you. My physio objective brain freaks out in the background, and I'm thinking about the 4,000 tests and pathways I could have done, which would have given me information, and then all the papers I've read in the last 10 years. And then my physio to patient brain is like, let's just be calm. This is really easy. We just need to get this person back to walking. So I don't know if anyone else experiences that, but I do every day. I'm not even treating anymore. So Anna Lou said, I would check for referred pain from the hip. She said, you've done an awesome subjective already. But if I wasn't feeling like I was on the right track, she would definitely look at the hip. Saranga, I think you have enough to go off for the one session. Segment motion may be a source of pain. So I think Saranga is saying she might have checked the segments. And muscle, glute muscle strength and endurance, which it sounds like you've got a little bit of. Activity to keep her moving and some strength work. Hip assessment would be done a little bit later. Gordon asks, what might determine your dosage for walking?
So for her, I asked her what her previous like tolerance was, and she was like, oh, I could walk for 45 minutes an hour. Like it sounded like it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. So what I said to her was, you know, maybe aim for like a 10, 15 minute walk, see how it goes. If it's really, really sore, then back off a little bit, do even less the next day. But if you can walk a little bit every day, that would be really, really good. And if she goes for the 10, 15 minute walk, that's okay. Maybe try and aim for 20 minutes every day. It was really, really basic, but that's kind of what I told her.
Claire says, outcome measures. So potentially the endurance test you did could be an outcome measure. Her walking distance could be an outcome measure. Something more objective might be her range of motion on the slump. They're the outcome measures I'm thinking of. Anna Lou says, wouldn't replace anything you've done. You've done a really good job. And she's constantly in an internal argument of general versus specific intervention. that is the battle. I think this is where motivational interviewing is really important for me, Kat. It helps ease those 1,000 questions I had. The one question I'm really thinking, and this is so easy for me because I know this patient, was there a time in your life where you didn't have this back pain? You know, was there a time in your life where you were doing all those things, when you were moving well and you were feeling good? Something, some kind of question around that, you know, can you remember a time where you didn't have this pain? And for me, that then dictates almost everything, almost the treatment we need to do, almost the dosage we need to prescribe. Did that come out in this session at all?
No.
Yeah, so that's a great... How might you phrase that question going forward? You've got a second shot at it, right?
Yeah. Maybe I could ask her, like, what kind of things... What did you enjoy doing when you were younger, maybe? Like, when you didn't... Like, was there anything you really, really liked to do? Like, kind of like the cooking and food and kind of example. Just a way to build rapport, but also get some information.
Yeah. So what is this stopping you from doing? What did you really enjoy doing? And I think that, yeah, I think anyone that's having constant flare-ups or persistent pain, asking the question of, you know, was there a time where this wasn't there? Or was there a time where you were functioning with this a lot better? Maybe the pain was exactly the same, but there was a time where you were functioning a lot better. We know that sometimes people with persistent pain don't even... The pain doesn't go. There's just times where they're managing it better and they're doing the things they love. So, again, so easy for me because I know 2 months ago she was healthier than she'd ever been. She was training often. She had reduced weight. She was fitter. She was walking every day. So it's so easy for me to know that that question would have kind of got everything out. And if I, you know, if this patient wasn't my mum, you may not be triggered to ask that question ever. I guess this is where a really good subjective template comes in, where you've got those questions there for you. And that maybe that question may becomes a staple of subjectives going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex says, the patient's why? Most important question in physio. Anna Lou says that question is gold. And cool, let's wrap up with treatment. So from the information you have attained, what treatment did you do and why?
I picked three things. The first one was a back extension exercise from prone lying. One of the things she said that she was probably the most stiff in the morning when she gets up, and sometimes at the end of the day it's pretty achy and sore. So I sort of identified that she could do about 8 reps of these when she wakes up and just before she goes to bed. So just lying on her tummy, arching up into her back, just to get a bit of range through her back in that pain-free range. That was number one. I told her to do it every day until I saw her again next week, which is Tuesday. The other thing I got her to do, like, ultimately I want to get her back into pain-free flexion, standing flexion. So I actually gave her a flexion-based exercise. Really light, just standing, and we went through sort of focused flexions. So, you know, really, really slow, really controlled, just until that pain level, which for her was actually pretty far down, which was good. And then obviously just coming back up, really focusing on that segmental bend and straighten. She seemed to tolerate that pretty well, so I gave it to her 8 reps of 2 sets. And that one was just once every 1 to 2 days. And I spoke to her about the walking as well and encouraged her to go for that 10, 15, and then push out if she could, but at least a little bit of walking every day.
Perfect. So you've given her, I would say, general movement in her direction preference, particularly where she reported being stiff in the morning. You've gotten her back to walking, and you've given her a baseline strength exercise, yeah?
Yep.
Cool. I might ask everyone on, what treatments would you have done? Would you have changed anything there? What would you have prescribed? Why did you pick those things, Kat? I think I was saying, again, so much easier for me. I probably would have been a little bit more aggressive with what I prescribed. But the clinician has no idea how this person's going to respond to an exercise day one. We don't know if we give this person a bridge, do they flare up to a 6, 7, 8 out of 10? Or do they do the bridges and nothing changes? So I think it's definitely easier to start low level and build that up while you're building rapport, trust, and getting to know the patient's patterns. Had you had any reflection on that since the consult?
A little bit. Yep. But I guess they're my kind of like, I generally like those exercises. So maybe I had like a bit of a personal bias preference towards those ones. But yeah, it's definitely good to think about other ones that could have been good too.
Yeah. What, on reflection, would you have done anything different in the treatment? Prescribed anything different or asked for anything different?
Bridges would have been a good exercise because that would have gone into extension as well. Yeah. Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I might not.
That's okay. What, I might say, what stopped you from going, say, heavier or loaded or a bigger dosage or something more like a compound movement, like a squat or a deadlift?
I guess I just didn't know how her back would tolerate a higher load at that point. Yeah. I just didn't know her. And if she came back on Tuesday and she was like, oh, yeah, it was fine, it was actually a bit easier, then I'd probably ramp it up. But I was a bit hesitant about giving it too much too soon.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this is where exercise prescription could go a thousand ways, right? Like you could do a dead bug, a Superman, a bridge, a squat, you know, just walk, deadlift, rotations, deep breathing, knee rocking. There's so many things we could give. How do you prescribe your exercise? Because that's changed for me. As an example, I try and have something that's a compound movement or a big movement, even if it's unloaded, just for confidence and to get all the parts moving. And the second thing for me is asking them what movements they would like to do and what movements maybe they're familiar with. Potentially that goes into the question of what were you doing when you were pain-free? How do you go about that? Because there's literally an exercise library of 1,000 that we could prescribe.
Yeah, I guess in my mind, I'm like, she's walked in to see me in the clinic, so I'm going to give her the ones that I think would be best suited for her. But ultimately, like, that's not important if she's not going to do them. So I think that's when that buy-in is even more important. And if she thinks that she's, you know, given an exercise that, and she's like really controlling her treatment, that's even better. So yeah, I think I could have done that more.
Well, and I think what you've prescribed is beautifully balanced because she said she likes walking and that's what she wants to get back to. So it's almost a give one and take one. Like, I want you to walk, but I want you to do this bridge for me, like physio brain telling me to do a bridge, right?
Yeah.
Denny's just laughing. He's no good on the live, is he? He's just put three laughy faces and I don't know what he's talking about.
He said, ignore the faces.
Did you see his post last night that cut his own head off?
What? No. It seems a bit dramatic.
He just did a post where his head wasn't in the post because classic Daddy.
What is this kid? Wow.
Gordon's got a good tip here. Regressions of what she wants to get doing or be doing. So maybe that question of what were you doing when you're at your best or what movements do you really like? That could be a great starting place because this is a regression of the thing that you were doing before you had pain. So that's a great way to pick an exercise. Hannah Lou says, I like the Palof press with the band. People tend to find it exciting and new. Rotation and anti-rotation. And it also starts coaching she might start with coaching a hip hinge pattern when you're heading towards a deadlift.
Yeah.
Denny's just agreeing that he doesn't know how to use social, and Laura is on board that train. So, perfect. Thank you. I mean, this is difficult to be questioned, asking all these questions and have 20 people as well, and mindful you're in your first year of private practice. And I'm also mindful that I have all this inside information. But I thought it was I think that actually allows us to be a bit more reflective. So just summing up, does anyone else have thoughts on this case as far as subjective, objective treatment or where we might go with it? And now that we've had a couple chats, what would your reflections be, Kat? Is there anything you're really looking for to fill the gaps in the next couple consults?
I think my subjective could just get a bit more information. Yeah, that's probably the biggest takeaway for me. And also knowing what more objective I could do.
Yeah. My feedback would be 100% on the subjective, a little bit more reflective, open, motivational interviewing questions. Probably only missed out on one or two, but those one or two may have potentially guided the treatment a little better. And then that helps you know what exercises to prescribe. Other than that, I think you nailed it. I think your objective test showed you two or three things you could work on. And I think your prescription actually spoke to those objective tests. And it was a little bit of what the patient really wanted to do, plus a little bit of what you were noticing in your objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. Nailed it.
Cool.
Do you have anything else you would like to ask?
Mick, that was really easy and fun. And I expected to be grilled more, like significantly more.
Why? It's hard.
I don't know.
It's hard. It's hard and easy at the same time. I'm not going to just come on here and grill you in front of 20 people.
Oh, it was good though. Thank you.
No worries.
Thanks everyone for listening in as well.
Thank you for sharing. Everyone's just giving you clappy hands and saying you've nailed it and doing a good job. All right. Thank you, Kat. Thanks for sharing the experience with everyone.
Thanks, Vic.
Have a good Easter. Go to Stingrays.
So good. I just don't have a bucket hat. I almost didn't give it to you. I really wanted it, actually. But then
next live with both bucket hats next live.
I don't have one, though. I need to get one. Yeah.
What are you doing today, Kat?
Gotta water these babies.
Oh, stop it.
Plant rehab. Stay. Gonna eat some hot cross buns for sure. Bought some yesterday. Yep. Yeah.
Beautiful. All right. Have a good long weekend, and I will see you on our Zoom chat.
Cool. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
This is the iMoveU podcast, getting you private practice ready. We give you fresh ideas on mindset, communication, and clinical skills so you can have a fulfilled career.